All right, gang, I have been tasked with giving you my 23 or 4 years of experience in counseling down to an hour. They've asked me to do with you what he calls lessons I've learned from counseling. So I'm going to try to give you an overview of some things that I have found have, one, changed my time frame with people, and two, it gives me a systematic way of walking through things. And we're going to deal with that also at the last hour. Some of the stuff that Keith was talking to you about objective and counseling, I'm going to kind of give you some of the things that when people come to me for training that I teach them to do so that they can begin to really get more specific and precise. Because the weakness in most counseling that I see from people is it's random. It's all over the place. And it's not very clear. It's not very definite. They don't have what I call concepts of analysis, things to really work through and to think through. So I want to take time to build some of that with you in this session. Then when we come back from the break, I want to give you a structure of what I do to teach people how to counsel so they can be a little bit more definite in the things that they do. So let's open up in a word of prayer, and then we will talk a little bit about this. And I'll just kind of broadly pull it together, and hopefully we can build some pictures here and dialogue together on this. So if I had to break down some of the central things, and you have it in front of you, the things I've learned in counseling, I want to start with this one. This one has really saved me a lot of time. When anyone talks to you, they're going to primarily talk about two things, people and circumstances, okay? And if I could break it down more specifically, let me give you six things you're going to hear all the time. It doesn't matter who you're talking to, they're going to revert back to these six things. Number one, people. Number two, past. Number three, parents. Number four, predicaments or problems, either one. Number five, pain. Number six, physical problems. In all of my years of counseling, there's not been a time when someone doesn't reference one of those things as the reason for why they do what they do or the topic of discussion. And look at those categories. When you're talking, don't you hit those categories? If you're not talking about people, you're talking about your past, or you're talking about your parents, or some predicament in life, or some pain, or some physical problem. It is over and over and over again. So what you will learn, it doesn't matter what the scenario, people and circumstances, those five things, or six things, will be the central key of discussion in all of your counseling. I've yet, in all my years of counseling, to hear anybody expand beyond those things. Okay? Does that make sense so far? And what it does, I'm not surprised at the conversations or what someone's going to bring to me, because here's what I know. Whatever they talk about is going to be a discussion about people and circumstances along these categories. Now, here's what I know that they don't know that I know about them. Okay? God is using people and circumstances to expose them, to change them. Satan is using people and circumstances to deceive them and keep them in bondage. Okay? They believe their problems are tied to people and circumstances. And they don't understand that people and circumstances aren't determining. People and circumstances are exposing. Okay? So Satan is, again, trying to blind them. God is trying to expose them through people and circumstances. So out of all the years of counseling, that never changes. That's one of those central realities, one of those concepts of analysis that I try to help my counselors learn so that they're not overwhelmed with details. Because all the details of life can be summarized in they're talking about people and circumstances. They're talking about these things. And so as I've learned that over the years, people can sit and talk to me for hours and I'm not overwhelmed. Because guess what I'm sitting there doing? I'm categorizing.
You know, this happened when I was a child, past. And, you know, I don't like my parents, parents. And, you know, sometimes with people, I feel people. And, you know, all this pain that I feel on the inside. I mean, it's just down the line with all those things. What they believe, though, is that their problems are based upon those things. That's not true. How they've chosen to respond to those things is the problem. Now, here's what else I know that they don't know. You only have three responses to life. Everything that happens to you, there are only three basic responses. And so as I'm listening to people, I've been able to see that everything comes down to these three basic responses. And that's what we see in this first thing here. And here are the three basic responses. I call them neutral responses. Neutral responses is when you're demonstrating and expressing happiness, sadness, disappointment, embarrassment, or hurt that does not violate Scripture. The normal expressions in life that God does not hold against us is wrong. Those are neutral responses. To be disappointed, to be sad, to be, those are neutral. However, nothing stays in neutral. Did you catch that? Nothing stays in neutral. That's why I know that that may be the initial response, but nothing stays there. Ultimately, you're going to go to one or two places. You're either going to be loving or what? Unloving. So with all of life, there are only three basic responses to people and circumstances: neutral, loving, or unloving responses. Now, how does that simplify the counseling session? Because when you're sitting with people, what are they going to talk about? What are those five things you're going to hear all the time? What's number one? What else? What else? What else? That's never going to change, guys. It's never going to change. When you sit down with someone today, you're going to hear one of those, if not all five of those or six of those things. Okay? And they're going to be three reactions that they're going to talk about that they don't know they're talking about. They're going to have neutral, loving, or unloving. Let's talk about loving. Loving is to have thoughts, motives, desires, communication patterns, behavior patterns, manner of life patterns, relationship patterns, or serving patterns we are commanded and empowered by God to have that demonstrate love for God and others. Those are loving responses. Unloving responses is to have unloving thoughts, motives, desires, communication patterns, behavior patterns, manner of life patterns, relationship patterns, and serving patterns that are prohibited by God and are determined by the evil in our hearts. So guys, guess what I know about you when you say, can I talk to you for a moment? What are you going to talk to me about? What are those, that list? And you're going to tell me by how you responded to those things that you responded in one of these three ways, if not all three. But you want me to give you a solution to how to fix what five or six things. How do I fix those people, parents? Because, see, you don't think the problem is with you. Where do you think the problem is? Outside of you, okay? And that is the normal condition of people, which is the sinful condition of people. It's not me, it's you, okay? It's not me, it's the circumstance. It's not me, it's everything else. So what I know, after all these years of counseling, these are the things that are going to come to me, and there's only going to be three basic responses, and I'll begin to see what my job is to expose them, to change them. We'll talk about that later. But these are just some practical lessons I've learned so far. So let me stop here for a moment before we look at the next thing. Does anyone have any questions or thoughts about this? Any questions or thoughts about this? Is this pretty simple? Pretty clear? When is this not true, by the way? Think of a time, and I want you to really push this. Think of a time when this isn't true. See, once you recognize that, counseling doesn't become so difficult. It becomes about evaluation to then see the next step. This is what I call the concept of analysis, a way to think about people and circumstances to prepare you to listen to serve them. Okay? So if this is true about me and it's true about you, then, again, as we listen to people, we're not so overwhelmed because all their responses fit in three categories: neutral, loving, or what? Unloving. Now, let's expand this a little bit. again, as people are responding to these people and circumstances and their basic responses that are going on, I also start to recognize that there are some issues revealed. And there are four key issues that are revealed when you look at this. And all I've done is just added two more things to kind of go over where we're going. And as I'm listening to people, I see this. Expectations and desires of life that have become the central focus of our attention above love for God and love for others. And so they keep talking, and what do I keep hearing? I didn't get this for me. This didn't happen for me. I wanted this. Why couldn't this do that? I don't understand why this isn't happening. And their central arguments, their central anger or worry or frustration or bitterness or whatever it is, there are some things that you are expecting. There are things that you believe you should have. There are things that you are dissatisfied with that you have put your life towards and in your time with me in relationship to people and circumstances or those six areas, you are talking about what you want that you didn't get, what you're getting you didn't want, blah, 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 blah. Does that make sense? And there's never a time when I didn't hear it long enough where it just comes right on out. And all I'm doing is hearing and I'm making documentation because I already knew they come to me with people and circumstances. They've got these reactions. And as I'm hearing their hearts, I'm hearing these things. Now, the other two we've talked about already, thoughts, motives, and desires that are right or wrong. I wanted you to look at the bottom because the bottom is the actual thing that I've added a second to. The reality that one does not have a genuine relationship with God and is in need of deliverance from the penalty and power of sin into a new and right relationship with God. So as I'm listening to people, what's coming out is their neutral, loving, and unloving responses. What's coming out is the desires, things that they are so consumed with that's so important to them, or the fact that I may be dealing with an unbeliever that needs the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, let me ask you a dumb question. When does that ever change? Tell me when this ever changes. Tell me what discussions you've had in counseling where it didn't come back to these basic realities. People and circumstances, these things, they react in a neutral, loving, and unloving way. They expose things that they were important to them they didn't get, or you recognize, I'm dealing with an unbeliever here. They need the gospel of Jesus Christ. So for me, as I'm sharing with you over 20-something years of counseling, these are some of the lessons I've learned that have saved me a lot of time in my gathering of data, in my evaluation. And this, again, I call these the concepts of analysis, ways of evaluating all the details to have big pictures, to process a lot, to put it in a way that are bite sizes so that you can figure out how to deal with it. And we'll talk about how to deal with it soon, but right now, we're just trying to teach you how to see things so that you're not overwhelmed with the details that you see. Does that make sense? Now, I want to take about 2 or 3 minutes because I've said a lot in a little bit of time. I want to give you a couple of minutes to just dialogue with each other about these two charts, and then we're going to come back and build on it with a third thing that I've learned that I build on to these two things that I'm sharing with you, okay? So take about 2 or 3 minutes. Talk about what you think, what you see. How can you implement this in your own life and the lives of others that you may be connected to? And we'll come back and build on it some more. Okay, I want to engage. Questions or comments? What do you think about what you see? How does this help you to think about counseling and just to think about people in general? Because as a shepherd and as a professor and the things I do, this helps me to get to the core pretty quickly with people. I mean, I don't rush to the core with them, but I know what's happening. So now I've already have a strategic plan within the first 5 minutes of the conversation of what week 1, week 3, week 7, week 8 is going to look like, because I'm seeing where they are, so we see what needs to happen. So questions or comments from any of you about what you think about what you see? Again, this is your time to share or think or process whatever you like.
I think this is good because sometimes when people are sharing with me, I get bogged down in that verse, those first 6.
Mm-hmm.
I get bogged down. So that helps me move past that to how they responded in those situations.
Right. Now, if you think about those
six,
it can be, but if you think about this, what is everybody's belief system? Their problems are because of this.
Right.
But what they haven't come to understand is they don't control those things.
Right. They think if you just take care of that problem for me, and I'll be fine.
Yes. What they don't recognize is their problem is tied to how they're choosing to respond to those things.
Exactly.
They think that that is the problem,
And many counselors think that's the problem, so they're trying to figure out how to fix it. And those are not things to fix. Those are things that reveal, because I can't control people and circumstances. I can control how I choose to respond to them. So therefore, the real problem is not people and circumstances. It's what? But see, they don't know that. Okay, so when they come to you, they think, I need to give you all this detailed information about this person. Since that's the problem, then you need to know everything I know about this person. Because that's the problem, and you're here to help me fix them. And then you begin later on, as I talk with you, how to expose them, and then they don't like you when it's over. Because you've exposed to them, no, this is like, how many of you heard me to give the water teabag theology scenario? You guys familiar with that? Okay, if you haven't heard it, for those that have heard it, act like you've heard it, never heard it, and be like, wow, that's profound, okay? All right, for those that hadn't heard it, this is the teabag theology. This is what I talk about. When you're a tea drinker, there's a reality you understand about tea. When you put the teabag in water, okay, the water brings out what's in the teabag. The water doesn't determine the flavor. It only brings out what's in the teabag. Now, look at those six things on the side. What are those six things again? What else? That's the water, and you are the teabag. They're not making you who you are. They are exposing who you are. And too often people think that that's because of, no, those things expose. And so in real life, I try to help people see these things aren't making you, they're exposing you. Because it's tied to Galatians 6:7, which talks about be not deceived, God is not mocked, whatever what? A man sows. It didn't say whatever here, the parents, people, predicaments, whatever happens, that's why. It says what a man sows that he shall reap, and there are two choices. Either he's sowing to his flesh or he's sowing to the what? Spirit. So the condition of every man's soul is not based upon people and circumstances. It's based upon how they've chosen to respond to people and circumstances. And they've chosen to respond in the flesh, then that's why you are where you are. Not because of how mean your husband or how mean your parents were or how mean people were to you in the past. How you chose to respond has determined the condition of your soul. Okay? The hardest part with people is to first help them see the distinction and then take ownership of that. Okay? Because if they don't take ownership of that, then every time you bring up a problem, what will they start to do? To what six things? You got it? So until they recognize that that's the water and they are the tea bag, you're always in this vicious cycle of them saying, yeah, but. Yeah, but. But see, I get it, but what about? But you know, well, what about them? Okay, and they miss the picture. Okay? Yeah, that woman you gave me. I'm blaming you and her at the same time. Okay? Does everybody understand the logic there? Anybody else? Questions or comments about that? Because if you grasp that up front in counseling, it changes your shift of understanding what has to happen with the individual, and you're not overwhelmed with details. Because again, what are their details going to be about? Those six things, right? And you need to know everything about my parents. Okay? You need to know everything about my past. You need to know everything about these people that I believe are causing me all this pain. You need to know everything about my pain, because how can you help me unless you let me vent for the next 8 hours? You can't help me unless you know all these details. Well, I really can, but I'm going to let you share, and then I'm going to bring it around. But really, you're going to tell me something that there's no temptation taking you but such as is common to man. And you don't recognize that the problem is your reaction, not these things. Because you've been psychologized. So I got to lovingly, patiently take the time to expose, to help you grow and change. Okay, does that make sense so far? It has saved me hours of time. Hours of time just to learn those basic principles. I want to build on that in just a moment, but I want to make sure there are no more questions about this before I add on. Questions? Did you have a question? Sometimes I don't. Okay. That first session, I let them run.
Okay.
Around the second or third session, I grab the hands and say, no, I thank you so much for sharing. But what we have, I think we have so much now that I think I can help you with what we have. But we'll come back to those things a little later. And I'll do it very lightly. And, you know, because when you touch somebody, it kind of stops them for a moment. Like, oh, whoa, what's going on here? You know. And I lean over very gently. Thank you. I think we have what we need to help you where you're going. Oh okay. So if you would allow me, if I could share with you what you've already shared, if I could show you something. And so very, very gentle, not nasty, not, hey, Shetty, she whiz. You know, just very gentle. But not the first time. I just let them ramble. Because here's what I know. What is it going to tie back to? Those six things. So I'm, you know, I can check out if I need to for a minute, come back. And, you know, it's still in those six areas. Because they're not going to tell me anything in those areas. And then I'll share with them something I'm going to share with you that I showed them to kind of take all the details and summarize it. Okay. Yeah. Eventually I am, because people don't like the truth. You know, even if you do it with a smile and you're nice, they still kind of don't like that you're making it about them. Because it's not me. It's, you know, it's everybody else. It's never me. I'm basically a good person. You know, really. Well, let's see what God thinks about that. You know. So let me share with you. This is my ace in the hole. After 7 hours of conversation with someone, I summarize all of their information down to this, and this is where they have to go home and think about it. And this is what I do in my very first session with people in counseling. We come to this to help people. Now, I want to explain it to you. Mm-hmm. Okay. But I have them draw things out first, and I show them this picture after they draw it out. Here's what I help people do. As they give me all the details, I start helping them understand the reality of life and what's really going on. So they'll share with me about those six categories, and, you know, by this time they're in tears or, you know, angry or want to, you know, throw something at somebody. Or I mean, so they've gone through the gamut of emotions and they've talked out. And as they've talked out, I'll begin to get them to write something down. And first, I'll give them this second as I get them to write down first. I say, okay, do something for me. I'm going to give you a sheet of paper. And I'll say to them, write on the left side of the sheet of paper what I can't control. And I'll get them to write that out. And I'll say, okay, now we're going to write down a list of things you can't control. Then I'll say, okay, write to the right what you can. I'm going to walk you guys through that. So as they write out on the side what I can't control, I say, well, let's talk about two central things that you can't control. I don't really go through all the five because all the five are summarized into two. Okay? And I'll say, let's talk about two things that you really can't control. What might that be? Sometimes they get it, sometimes they don't. It doesn't matter what they say. I'm going to tell them what it is. Okay? But this is an exercise to get their minds thinking about all the details they've given me. So I'll say, well, tell me. I don't know. I said, what about people? Can you really control people? And they go, well, I guess you can't. Well, let's get very specific and precise biblically about the things I can't control about people. They say, okay. And I want you to write it down. As a matter of fact, don't put people, because you came to talk to me about your husband, so put your husband's name right there. Or you came to talk to me about your wife, so put your wife's name right there. Or you came to talk to me about your cousin. It doesn't matter who it is. I just tell them to put the person's name there. You got it? So let's look at the things I can never control about people. Number one, can I ever control what someone's thinking? Can I ever control that? So I said, write that down. They write that down. I said, what about what a person desires? Can you ever control what someone desires? No, I said, write that down. That's good. So they got thinking now, and they got desires. Okay. What about a will of a person? Notice I say will, and I don't say actions. Can I tell you why? Because I can lock you down. Okay. But I can't control your will to try to get away or to do. I can make you sit down, but you could be standing up in your mind. Does that make sense? So I can never control your will. I may be able to kind of short-circuit some of your actions. But if I'm going to be technical about this, I never, ever have control over your will. True or false? Does that make sense? And we can prove that biblically, right? So you can't control what a person thinks. You can't control what a person desires. You can't control their will. What about what a person feels? Can I control what you feel? Huh. What about what a person says? I mean, I can cut your tongue out, but you can still keep talking, can't you? So if we get practical, I can't control what a person thinks. I can't control what a person desires. I can't control what a person wills. I can't control what a person feels. I can't control what a person says. True or false? And we can prove that through the Bible, can we not? So I will test that by saying, I'm thinking something right now. Can you control what I'm thinking? What's the answer? And then I'll say to the counselee, I'm feeling something right now. Can you control what I'm feeling? What will they say? I'm desiring something right now. Can you control what I desire? You know, I'm really saying something. Can you control any of these things that I'm saying right now? Okay? Can you control my will right now? And as I go through all that, they go, no. I said, well, great. I said, okay, now, what about the outcome of events? Can I control if it's going to rain or snow or any of those things? So I have them write that down. I said, this is good. This is good. I said, now, right on the other side, what I can control. So then we get to looking at what they can control. I said, well, let's think about this. What can I control? Then they get logical on me. Well, if I can't control the other person's thinking, I can control my thinking. Very good. Write that down. So what else can you control? Well, if I can't control what they desire, I can control. Very good. Write down. You can control your own desires. We're getting somewhere. Now let them go through. So then what you can control, what you think. You can control what you desire. You can control what you feel. You can control what you say. You can control your own will. You can control your own feelings. This is great. But Jill or John or Jed, we've got a problem here. Because the last 3 hours have been spent with you telling me that your decisions were determined by these people and circumstances. But in these last 2 minutes, you've just exposed that those things can't determine what you do or don't do. So we have a dilemma here. How do we reconcile all this stuff you've been doing, because the things that you just told me that determine it, you just now said can't determine it? So when you said your husband makes you angry, well, in reality, since you can't control him and he can't control you, can he make you angry? You have decided to be angry. When you said so-and-so hurt your feelings, I mean, I get that you have real hurt, but can we talk about what really happened? They disappointed your expectations. And who set the expectations? You did. And who's responding to the expectations that you set? You are. So the feelings are real. I'm not ignoring your feelings, but your hurt feelings exist because of expectations unmet, and you've chosen to respond to those expectations with the feelings that you have, since you control your feelings and you control your thoughts. So this ticked offness that you have with this person, can they make you be ticked off, or did you decide? And then they go, huh. I said, so then we've got to figure out what's driving all of this, since it's not driven by people and circumstances, and you said you're responsible for these decisions, then what determined it? And they're looking at me strange, like, I don't know, get to it. And I'm trying to build attention on purpose, okay? And I say to them, every choice you make are driven by the motivations of your heart. And your motivations are simple. It's either driven by selfish ambition or love. So when you were ticked off with your spouse, is being ticked off a loving thing or an unloving thing? What would you guys say? So then what drove you to be ticked off? It sure wasn't love for them. It had to be your what? So when you decide to disconnect with Willie because Willie was so stupid and how could he do those dumb things and you're mad at him now, all of what you chose to do was driven by love or selfish ambition? Which one? Huh. So all these issues you've exposed in the last 3 or 4 hours to me can be summarized in this big picture: what you could not control and what you could control, and that every choice was either driven by ambition of love or selfishness. Now, what did I just do to that counselee in that 6 hours of them telling me about those 5 things? Now, something's going to happen here. If they're going to accept what I'm saying, we're going to move forward in counseling. If they don't accept what I'm saying, what's going to happen? You got it? Now, is this true? I have no control if they accept it or reject it. But guess what I knew before they started opening their mouths? I already knew what they could and could not control and what was inside in their choices. Because this is biblical reality. Guess what I know about anybody when they want to come talk to me and spend hours to tell me how nasty their husband is or how ugly their wife is or how nasty their parents have been, how ugly these people have been to them. All those things are true. Tell me how you responded to those things that happened to you with this ugly person, this nasty person, this bad mom, this ugly dad. How did you respond to that? Huh. And if you look at those responses, what drove those responses? Since you can't control this, but you can control you, what drove those responses? Was it either selfish ambition or what? Tell me when that's not true in any situation or circumstance. Does that make sense? It has saved me so much time in counseling because this is my first session with everybody. This is why I let them talk for hours if they need to. And so as they're talking for hours, guess what I've done? I've categorized what they can and can't control, what's driving their choices. Now I let the Spirit of God work on their hearts. And then, you know, there's homework I give on top of that, but we'll talk about that now. But do you see this principle? So let's go back. I know something about the individual up front. Here's what I know up front. Neutral, loving, unloving responses based upon people and circumstances, and we've categorized it down to those six things. I know that they're going to tell me about desires not realized and the other things, and either they're saved or unsaved. I already know what they can and can't control and what's driving their choices. This is what I teach my counselors. I call it concepts of analysis. These are ways for them to take all the detail that people give and summarize it in these basic pictures that are always true so they're not overwhelmed with all the details. Make sense, you guys? Take about 3 or 4 minutes. Talk about what you see, and we'll come back and build on it with a little bit more information. A little bit more. Yes.
Am I allowed to ask you a question right now?
Sure.
So what would you say to someone like, if, let's say, like a husband and wife? Let's say the husband actually says something that really means the wife.
Mm-hmm.
And her feelings are hurt. Like, is it wrong for her feelings to be hurt?
No.
Or is it just you're more looking at what was her reaction to after her hurt?
No, I'm helping her to see your feelings are hurt because you control the expectations. Once you change your expectations of this mean man and raise your love, your feelings won't be hurt that more because you know he's mean and selfish. So if you lower your expectations and raise your love, you'll find that those words won't be as harsh to you anymore because you've lowered your expectations. But you control that ultimately. So I'm not ignoring the feelings of hurt. I'm saying you have expectations that you have to adjust because you can't control this person. Now I'm going to flip the script with him and talk about his choices.
Like, you're not excusing his behavior or saying she was necessarily... Would the lady be necessarily wrong?
The hurt feelings aren't wrong. It's why do they exist?
Okay.
I'm trying to help her understand the reality of why they exist so she can take responsibility. But see, that's the natural progression. What I tell them is this isn't about wrong. This is about control. Your feelings exist because of what you're thinking. You're dealing with an individual who right now is not willing to change what you can't control them changing. So either you're going to change your expectations or you're going to stay hurt. Why? Because your expectations are they ought to do this and they're not willing to. So then you keep getting hurt, but you're going to blame them for the hurt. And the hurt is based upon your expectations. So what you can control is not what they will or will not do for you. How are you going to handle what they are doing and not doing? So if you lower your expectations and raise your love, as stupid as they are, as you've said it, you will learn to live with that and grow in your character, which is what God wants from you.
And there was
see that escalating into true verbal abuse of a woman, whereas she's the only one coming to counseling because her husband may not be able to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Would you then rely on 1 Peter 3, where by her example, you can hopefully win him to Christ? Or at what point do you say this is getting too close to where?
Well, it's always going to be a gentle answer turns away wrath because you can't control it. But even in the verbal, as long as it turns to physical, you have to learn to handle it. When it turns to physical, you call the elders, you call the police. Let him sit in jail for a while. I mean, you see what I'm saying? You use the law and you use the church. Yes. You wouldn't be coming to counseling. Exactly right.
Because no response stays neutral. If you have a loving response, you don't need counseling, and you only need counseling if you then internalize it and then you've made it an unloving response within you.
Yes. Yes. Could you ever control that person?
Whoever. You cannot control this person.
Yes.
And so you know you can't control this person, and so you are just on a continual, like, God convicts you, and you do the right thing,
mm-hmm.
and then you're doing good, and then that person does something again. So it's like it gets to the point where you're doing the right thing every time.
Why are you doing the right thing?
You're working through the right thing, but maybe that person would need encouragement to keep going.
But why are you doing the right thing?
Because you're being obedient to God.
But why are you being obedient to God?
Because it's the right thing to do.
See, it's always more to it. Obedience is not the end, it's the means. I obey because I want to know him, become like him, be useful to him. When obedience becomes the end, you burn out because it's self-righteousness. Mm-hmm. See, I'm not obeying because it's about obeying. I'm obeying because this leads me to know him, become like him, be useful to him, which gives me more energy to deal with your foolishness. Because, see, in loving you, you can't be the reason I love you or I'm going to burn out. I have to love you because my love is driven by the Spirit of God, not because of you, which is what Jesus does with us. He says, love as I've loved you. He didn't love us according to who we were. He loved us according to who he was. Right? And he gives us unlimited power to love even the foolish. So when there's a lack of love, it's always coming back to me. That's where my character development grows. But now let's take it deeper. I chose you because of my idolatrous lust. See, I didn't choose you out of love. I chose you out of my own lust. Now I'm ticked off because you're not panning out to what I thought you'd be for me. So now I'm going to try to do good. Why? So I can get you to do right by me. Not because I love God and love you. So my motive is still wicked at core because I'm still trying to figure out how to do right and manipulate that to get you to do what I want. So God's word isn't working because he's still being stupid. Well, he was stupid from the beginning, okay? But you overlooked his stupidity as long as you were getting what you wanted. Now you're not getting what you want, so you're highlighting his stupidity or vice versa. You got it? I'm just exposing your heart to show you what needs to happen now with this reality. Does that make sense? Now, that doesn't mean he has the authority, she has the authority to abuse you, like I was sharing here. That's when you call the law. You get to sit in jail for a while. Think about what you did. Okay? You never have the right to put your hands on me, ever. However, why was I with you from the beginning? And this is the reaping and sowing process that you have to help people lovingly work through. Because we're very selfish when we choose people in relationships. And it shows itself out when things get bad. And what I try to do in premarital counseling is say, look at these character deficiencies of this person. Can you commit to the covenant in spite of this? Or are you only driven by what you want from this person, which is what this is all about? Let me tell you how this is going to unravel in the future. Okay? Does everybody catch that? Questions, comments? Let's talk about it before we move to the next thing. Am I making sense to you guys? It's easy, but it's hard, you know, because our flesh is driven to something else. Because, again, stupid question. Tell me when this is not true.
Is there ever a time this is not true? See, it's the foundation of life that we don't live by. That's what makes it difficult. But tell me what you think, guys. I want to hear from you. Again, this has saved me a lot of time with people. And I'll let them talk for hours. And guess what? I've already figured out what you can control, what you can't control, what's determining your motives. You're telling me about people, places, and I'm just listening. And then the second hour, I'm going to give you some more details on that. Yes. Yes. Think about it this way. We'll talk about this in the next hour, but think about ABC, awareness, brokenness, change. ABC, awareness, brokenness, change. Those are the stages that you have to help people understand in the process of counseling. We're going to get to that in the next hour. But if you're trying to move people to change and they're not yet at awareness, you're going to be frustrated. If you're trying to move people to change and they're not yet broken, you're going to be frustrated. Change happens in the life of your counselee when there is brokenness over the awareness. When there's just awareness and no brokenness, you're trying to force what won't ever happen because they're not willing to accept the reality of what you gave them. Okay? And you get frustrated. Well, I give them homework, again, and my homework is specific to this, which we're going to talk about later. See, I don't just give you a lesson without giving you the homework, like Keith talked about, and we're going to talk about categories of homework that deals with the counselor. I'm going to get more strategic in that, because that's where, for me, you're going to walk away from me, I'm not going to walk away from you. So what's going to happen is, I'm going to stay where you are. Either you're going to be broken and changed, or you're going to say, you know, whatever with you, and I'm out of here. But I see where you are. I can't take you where you want to go until there's brokenness and change. So I'm going to keep sticking where you are. And either you're going to come back and keep fighting with me and doing the homework, and God's going to break you, and then we're going to move forward, or you're going to get tired and walk away. I'm not going to walk away from you. You're going to walk away from me. But I'm not going to let you force me to go where you think it ought to go. I'm going to lovingly help you where you are. Does that make sense? Because remember, counseling is not about me. It's about the person. So I'm not taking it personal. It's not a reflection of me, or none of those things. And what I tell people is, I need you to answer a question for me. And I tell them this. What changes in my life if you listen to me? What's the answer? Nothing. What changes in my life if you don't listen to me? What's the answer? Nothing. So all of this is for you. It's not for me. I love you. And I'm leading you through this if you choose to accept it. If you choose to reject it, I truly respect that as well. But this is all for you, not for me.
Can you approach this differently with a believer than with a non-believer?
It's all about the gospel. And they get tired of that. And then they're either going to walk away or get saved. Yeah. Yeah. You keep coming back to the gospel because that's the answer. I'm out of here. I love you.
So would you ever move away from the gospel presentation and get into exposing sin stuff, or would you just...
Expose the sin and bring it back to the gospel. Expose the sin, bring it back to the gospel. Expose the sin, bring it back to the gospel. Mm-hmm. And I'll keep doing it till either one thing happens. They get tired and walk away, or they get broken and we can move forward.
What about someone who was sexually abused as a child? Dealing with that?
We deal with the suffering part first. And I bear the burden with their suffering, and then we deal with how they've been reacting over the years that have been sinful. I don't start with this with a sufferer. I start with their suffering, and then when the time is right, we'll move to how they dealt with sin. My oldest daughter was sexually molested by her stepfather for 9 years, and then we adopted her, so I had to work through all of that. We start with her suffering, bear the burden with her, cried with her, walked her through the pain of it. And then we began to talk about the things that she could control and the patterns of life that she developed and reactions to the things that she couldn't control, what was neutral, what was loving, what was unloving, and we talked about here's what's been keeping you in bondage. Let's walk through that together. But that took time because there are two sides of the coin with everybody. They suffer and they what? Sin. You got to have a healthy balance of dealing with their suffering as well as dealing with their sin. And when someone has been raped or molested or whatever, we're going to spend a lot of time on the suffering, and then we'll talk about how they chose to handle it that was not helpful, that has them in bondage. Does that make sense? And I mean, it doesn't matter who the person is. That's always a strategy. They suffer, they sin. They sin, they suffer. They suffer, they sin. You got to deal with both sides of the coin in a most healthy, balanced way. And, you know, when you do that with people, as with my daughter, you would never know that she had been raped and molested for all those years because as we worked through those issues with her, and I've had to work through women who've been abused and battered, the whole thing, and in the same category. I'm not going to start with what you can and can't control. I'm going to start with where they have experienced suffering. I've got this whole thing that I do called the theology of suffering. Why does suffering exist? And I give them 12 categories of why you suffer according to Scripture. And I let them pick out, based upon these categories of suffering, which ones are reflective of where you are in life. And then we talk about that. You know, now that's on my website. You can get that. MyCounselingCorner.com, where I have that whole thing on suffering, and you can download that material. Okay, does that make sense to everybody so far? Any other questions about this? Again, these are lessons I've learned that they've saved me so much time. I mean, I sit back and I listen, I'm encouraged because I praise God, I have a way to help people if they want it. And I'm not going against the grain of reality. Does that make sense? Because you're always going to tell me about what six things, right? And then you're going to be talking about your reaction to those things. You don't know that I'm listening to you going, we can go another 8 hours. They say, I hope I'm not overwhelming you, Pastor. No. Talk to me. And I'll sit there and they'll just be going on and on. You know what I'm doing in my mind. What they can control, what they can't control, motivations. You know, I'm writing things down. I'm putting it in those categories. And so when we're done, I've got those people play. These are the people you told me about. This is the past stuff you told me about. These are the things you told me about your parents. These are the pain issues you revealed to me. These are the physical problems you talked to me about. Am I correct? Oh, yeah, this is it. This is how you told me you responded to all these things. What I'd like to do is help you to work through this. If you don't mind, I'd like to share something with you I think would be helpful. And then we go to this. Mm-hmm. It was horrible. I didn't know any of this, so it's this lesson I've learned. It was horrible. I was all over the place. Homework was horrible. I was just chasing every little detail. Everything they said, I chased it. You know, tried to find a Bible verse for every little detail. It was horrible. It's horrible. You know, now I don't try to chase every little rabbit because I know the difference between the root and the fruit. And, you know, I let them talk. And I know where we're going to go now. So it's a lot different. And what I try to do in my supervision, I ask people to give me 5 weeks of training before we get to their actual counseling session. And I teach them these things. Then we get into the counseling, which makes it a lot easier for them to kind of go through. So I ask now, if you want me to be your supervisor, can I have 5 weeks of training before? Oh, okay. In their minds, I don't see why we need it. And then after 5 weeks, thank you. Now I see why we need it. So now let's do your supervision. All right, let me give you a few more things, and we'll take a little break and come back. Is this making sense? Is this helpful to you?
Yes.
Good, good, good. All right, now, here's what I know. If you're driven by selfish ambition, okay, this is what I know about you up front. And this is where it gets back to the thing we talked about with idolatrous lust. Because if you're driven by selfish ambition, then I know that you are rooted in pride. And pride ultimately is a mindset on self. And I know this about you, okay? So every sin you commit is based upon pride, okay? And because you're driven by selfish ambition, here's what I know. You've got some lustful desires that you've made more important than loving God and loving others, true or false. And there are some idols that you have been clinging to that have led to the problem. So I already know this as you're responding in an unloving way to those six things. And I know what you can and can't control. So if you're driven by selfish ambition, you have a mindset on self, you've got some idolatrous lusts in your life. I need to figure out what they are as I listen to you. But what I also know is as you start to talk to me about where you're worried, it's tied to your idolatrous lust. Where you start to talk to me about where you're angry, it's tied back to your idolatrous lust because life is all about you. When you start to tell me about your depression, I know it's tied back to your idolatrous lust because of your pride. Because you're depressed, because you're not dealing with something, you're angry, you're worried. Why? These idols are supposed to come through for me the way that I worship them because of what I want from them, because life is all about me. I know this before we have the counseling session, because this is a natural progression for you apart from God's Spirit. So as I'm dealing with you, you're talking, I'm filling in the blanks. Let me tell you about this person. Blah, 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 blah. Let me tell you about my past. Blah, 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 blah. Let me tell you about my parents. Blah, 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 blah. Let me tell you about all these predicaments of my life. Blah, blah. Let me tell you about the pain I feel because of her. Let me tell you about these physical problems I have, blah, 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 blah. And you don't understand. I've spent my life giving to everybody, and I don't understand why people won't give back to me. And what am I looking for? Your lust for approval, your lust for control, blah, blah, blah. And you have been idolizing people, and now you're ticked off about it because the world is all about you. I'm not going to tell them all of that in the first session. I've got to spend some time putting sugar on top and slowly building, but I already know what's going on, but it's going to take some time. But guess what? If they can't get past this and begin to accept this, I can't expand it to get to this. See, their acceptance of this leads me to go deeper with them into this. You got it? And so these are lessons I've learned over the years. And as I listen to people, I'm seeing these things. I'm listening. I'm making little lists. And I'm going, okay. And I see where we're going with this. I see where they are. It's not time to reveal all of this. That's team too much. Let's just start with what you can and can't control and what's driving your choices. Let me give you some homework to help you see that. As they start to embrace that, good. Now, we're going to build on that and talk a little bit more about a few more things. Let's build on some homework at that. And as we lead towards awareness, brokenness, and change, or brokenness, when we get into change now we can get into some strategic things of put off and put on. We're not ready for that yet. You need to be aware and broken over these realities. And where there's no awareness and brokenness here, there can be no real change. So I got to spend a lot of my time bringing you to awareness and brokenness through the power of God, then we can talk about the change. We are so quick to try to get people to change, and there's no what? Awareness and brokenness. They don't get it. And so our objectives have to be very clear so that our counseling structure and sessions and homework become very clear. Okay? Everybody see this so far? Okay? Let me read a little bit for you under here. As you walk in pride, my time is short. Let me not do that. It's about to come on your break time. Let me go to the next thing here. What is the opposite that I'm trying to lead people into? That would be humility, love for God, love for others. So then they will be embracing God, accepting what God allows, and they have the peace. And all of that is the opposite of the other. So I have the agenda set already. They need to walk in some humility. They need to walk in love for God and others. You can't walk in love for God and others until you have what? Humility. What are the two greatest commandments in life? So what are the two greatest problems in life? See, that's what we miss. Okay? Everything I just summarized comes back to that. The two greatest commands are to love God and love others. The two greatest problems are what? Lack of love for God and lack of love for others. Well, how is that revealed? Pride, idolatrous lust, and all these other things. So I need to lead them to humility. Lead them to love God, love others. What will happen? I need to teach you how to embrace God, accept what God allows, and watch God's peace override all this other stuff in your life. Okay? These are some of the practical things, guys, that I have learned in over 20-something years of counseling that have saved me a lot of time. And I don't like you right now because you're getting it in like an hour.
what's taking me like 20 years to figure out. You can go, oh, now it's simple. I can just go, arr. You're welcome, you know. All right, let's do this. Let me read that part before time goes back. Go back to the pride one. I want to read under there before we stop for break, so you can see some things here. On your notes, it says, as you walk in pride, you will be consumed with lust. As you're consumed with lust, you will seek idols to satisfy your lustful desires. When the idols seemingly are not going to follow through your expectations to satisfy your lustful desires, you may begin to worry. When the idols do not follow through on your expectation to satisfy your lustful desires, you may fall into anger. All of this worry and anger could possibly lead you to depression. As you listen and talk with people, evaluate how you're responding to other people and circumstances. Listen to the dominating topics of conversation to determine what you tend to treasure, dislike, worry about, get angry about. Learn the people, places, products, and perspectives you tend to discuss the most and why. Listen to see if your primary conversations are driven by discussions of yourself or other things more important than yourself. Identify who or what tends to lead you to react in happiness or sadness. Okay, look at the next part. As you walk in humility, you will be preoccupied with love for God and love for God. As you're preoccupied with love for God, you will develop in genuine love for others. As you walk in love for God and love for others, you will develop in embracing God and accepting what God allows as you live by your trust in the person, plans, precepts, and promises of God. Living this way involves living by your commitment to God and confidence in God above your mood of the moment. As you develop in living by your commitment to God and confidence in God, you will experience the peace of God in your life on a consistent basis in the good and bad of life. Overall, as you develop in living by humility, love for God and others, embracing God and accepting what God allows, you will not only experience the peace of God consistently, but you will find yourself turning away from a life reduced to thinking or to making God, people, and circumstances the help to or the complaint against your accomplishing your personal ambitions. Living a life where you make God, people, and circumstances the help to or the complaint against you accomplishing your personal ambitions reveal the pride, lust, idolatry, worry, or anger in your life, which can lead to depression in your life. Evaluate your life and see where you stand. Identify where you are lacking in humility and love for God and others, embracing God and accepting what God allows, and in the peace of God. Move into the process of remorse over your sin accordingly, renouncing of your sin accordingly, repenting of your sin accordingly, renewing your mind in the truth of humility, love for God and others, embracing God, accepting what God allows, and the peace of God. Replace the pride, lust, idolatry, worry, anger, and all of the sins discovered, which can lead to depression, with humility, love for God and others, embracing God, accepting what God allows, which will result in the peace of God accordingly on a consistent basis in the good and bad of your life. You will see a difference in your life when you start living for God and stop living for yourself. People and circumstances will be handled by God's agenda. You will find that life is more satisfying and productive as you live to please God instead of seeking to use God, people, or circumstances to accomplish what is and has been more important to you above your allegiance to and obedience to God. You will find that life is more satisfying and productive as you live to please God instead of being worried or angry with God, people, or circumstances as a result of them falling short of providing what is and has been more important to you above your allegiance to God and obedience to God. Does that make sense to you? All right. We got about 15 minutes to digest all this. I'm going to come back and give you a big form of how to do all this stuff. All right. Take 15 minutes.